well, you know, breaking your mom out of jail, that's just something the British would call cheeky.
Hello, and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, the media podcast full of feelings, friendship, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And this week, we are joined by Rich and Lainey.
Hi, I'm Rich Camelucci. I am president of Arcade Audio and producer of Pod Slam, a live podcasting marathon for Connor's Cure this September 21st, live in Chicago, and we'll be live streaming it as well.
And my name is Lainey Kress, and I am a booktuber on YouTube. My channel name is Ginger Reads Lainey, where I talk about books as well as my writing process. And I also co-host a podcast, The Novelty Show, where I talk about the ins and outs of the publishing industry.
Rich and Lainey are joining us this week to talk about Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. Sorry, Fast Ampersand Furious Presents colon Hobbs. This movie opens with an MI6 team, including Hattie Shaw, played by Vanessa Kirby. I apologize in advance. I'm going to try real hard to use everybody's character names, but Vanessa Kirby / Hattie Shaw and her MI6 team is on a big mission to retrieve what we eventually learn is an incredibly deadly and contagious virus. They are interrupted by a group of bad guys led by Idris Elba, who has been mechanically altered into a sort of cyborg supervillain. Brixton is his character's name. Yes. Mm-hmm. He's the one who I'm going to have the hardest time keeping track of. Team Idris kills everybody except Hattie, who manages to escape with the virus. Unfortunately, the only way that she was able to do this was by injecting herself with that virus, which begins the movie's like the ticking clock that drives the movie forward. The virus is contained in these capsules that are now in her hand, and they will dissolve in a few days. So that's like how long she has to find someone who can get it safely out of her and not be captured by Idris Elba and his team. Idris Elba actually works for a shadowy corporation that is very wealthy and powerful, and they wanted the virus in order to complete a big mission, which is basically like Thanos, but make it eugenics. They frame Hattie for all of the MI6 murders and make it look like she stole the virus for terrorism. Enter the titular Hobbs and Shaw in a sort of like side-by-side thing. We meet Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing Luke Hobbs, an American spy, and Jason Statham playing Deckard Shaw, a former British spy, a disgraced former British spy, maybe? I don't know. I don't really know. And also Hattie's brother. These two have a long history of hating each other, but because of reasons, they are the only ones who can track down Hattie. Unfortunately, these two hate each other so much that not even saving the world is enough to make them work together. Hobbs captures Hattie, and he believes that she was framed because she didn't try to kill him. Shaw comes to rescue his sister from Hobbs, but Team Eugenics shows up, and ultimately Hobbs and Shaw are forced to work together to get away, and soon those two are also set up as being part of Hattie's fake terrorist plot. We also learn in this first confrontation between Idris Elba and Hobbs and Shaw that Shaw had previously killed Idris Elba, so there's like big what the fuck and oh shit energy around this whole situation. Once the trio is finally forced together, they set off to find the one scientist who can help get the virus out of Hattie, who is played by Spyglass from Atomic Blonde, which I was like, I like gasped. I was so excited. There's so many cameos in this movie, and that's the one that got me to gasp. But anyway, unfortunately, the scientist says that the options are either kill Hattie and burn the body or to break into a super secure lab owned by Team Eugenics. The team calls upon an old girlfriend of Shaw's who has a network of hot lady criminals. And this must be some sort of fun referential callback for you Fast and Furious fans, because they don't really serve much purpose. They outfit the team with some gear. And they can magically acquire all this gear anyway. So like the hot lady team, whatever. They do, however, hand Vanessa Kirby off to Idris Elba, because the big plan is that they're going to let him take Hattie to the little removal machine. It's like they want the virus too. And then the plan is for Hobbs and Shaw to break in and then help her escape. Shit goes awry. The scientist dies. The machine breaks. But the trio manages to escape with the broken machine. And Hobbs reveals that the only scientist in the whole world who they can possibly turn to fix this machine is his estranged brother in Samoa. So the team heads there for Hobbs to make amends and also get this machine fixed. Team Eugenics, of course, finds them and arrives on the island just as the machine was repaired. They rig it up to a weird backpack because it's going to take exactly 30 minutes enter like a ticking clock within the ticking clock to extract the virus. Explosions and wild car stunts ensue, including the biggest set piece of the film in which Idris tries to ride off with Hattie, but Hobbs like lassos a helicopter and like a chain from their car, and then a bunch of other cars are all like hooked together to help weigh the helicopter down. This isn't a plot point. I just feel like I had to mention it. Anyway, the trio obviously like wins. Shaw has the opportunity to kill Idris Elba, but he doesn't. But the like disembodied overlord of Team Lugenix remotely shuts him down anyway, so like he still dies. And then that same sort of disembodied overlord turns on a nearby radio to say some ominous stuff about how they're definitely going to be back. The end. That's it.
I'm not sure I like how stupid your plot synopsis made this seem, but
I mean, I feel like it's appropriately stupid.
I mean, I feel like if you were to give that, like, write that out and give that to $7 Productions, which is the name of Dwayne The Rock Johnson's production company, they'd be like, yeah, this is what we did.
Perfect.
You nailed it. Great.
All right, we will start where we always start, kind of. I want to ask you guys the question of, did you like this? But also, just give us some background on you and the Fast and the Furious franchise so far. Are you caught up? Do you enjoy them in general? And did you like this film?
Yeah, so I'm genetically predisposed to liking these movies. I don't know what it is. It's just like, it's like the virus in my veins. It's I've actually just finished on Wednesday a rewatch of all of the movies in the series. I remember going to see the first one in theaters with my dad, and it was just like, it was 2001, and it was like the perfect time for like me at that age, just about to start like getting into cars, and in South Florida, where, and then Too Fast, Too Furious took place, and it's just like, oh, it's just this perfect storm of just like, I should have so many more tickets than I ever did get. And then, yeah, was just kind of like with it all the way, except for Tokyo Drift. I worked at a theater during Tokyo Drift, so I saw that ending so many times, which is apparently the highest testing ending in Universal Studios history, or at least up until that point. But yeah, I am with this franchise, I am ride or die.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much the same as well. I've been watching this franchise for so long, and it's kind of not to bring up the mummy, but to bring up the mummy.
Amazing.
I feel like the Fast and Furious franchise has a lot of the same qualities as why I love the mummy so much. It has action, it has comedy, it has romance, it has a little bit of everything in there that I just really connect with throughout like the watching experience of it. And I also watched all these movies with my stepdad. It's kind of like our bonding thing. And I really liked Hobbs and Shaw. It was like stupid fun. And sometimes you just gotta love those kind of movies.
It has the Scorpion King in the franchise.
Yeah.
These two are linked.
So it's also very targeted to Lainey's enjoyment.
Yes, my brand is very much represented in this.
I definitely saw the first one in theaters. Past that point, I maybe saw one or two sequels, but like have very dim memories if I did. So my experience with the franchise is very limited. I definitely haven't seen any of these movies in over a decade. So I have no background, as evidenced by my plot synopsis, in which I'm guessing at what pieces of this are referential and what aren't. I will say I appreciated that it didn't require that background knowledge. There were definitely lots of places where it was like, okay, I assume that there is some sort of wink and a nod happening here, but you didn't need any knowledge going into this movie. I knew basically nothing about this franchise, and I was able to follow this movie. I mean, you know, there are pieces of it that are absurd, but that's like internal absurdity and not a byproduct of it being part of a like a long established franchise, which I appreciated. I mostly liked it, I guess. I don't know. It was fine.
We'll try and unpack that along the way. I do enjoy this franchise. Again, going back to like what Rich said, but when the first movie came out, I was probably 14 or 15. And I feel like I was like peak its audience. I don't know, something about like hot guys and cars. And I was a teen. I was like, cool, I'm in. But more than like enjoying it or like anything like that, my older sister loved the first Fast and the Furious movie. And we owned it after like whatever, after it was released or whatnot. So we must have rewatched that movie millions of times. And so it became a thing that I did with my sisters. Every time there's a Fast and Furious movie, we go watch it in theater together, which we went to go see Hobbs and Shaw too, even though we're now at the point where multiple babysitters need to be found so we can even watch a movie. We're still doing the thing. So there is a soft spot in my heart for this franchise. And I did enjoy this movie. I thought it was fun. It was like, you know, stupid fun, like Lainey said, and we all agreed that it is like stupid fun. I laughed. Parts of it were really cheesy. Some of the dialogue was just like eye-rolly, but I don't know. I had an enjoyable 2 hours at the movies, and if this were on TV, I would watch it again. I'm lying. I would watch this again purposefully in like a marathon of all of this.
You're trying to say, oh yeah, I would watch it like if it were on or whatever. But
no, I would seek this out and be like, let's watch some Hobbs and Shaw. I think that probably the place to start is with the fact that this is like Fast and Furious Presents. So it's kind of like a spinoff of two characters that come in later in the series. And you've got to imagine that, you know, these two characters and these two actors are popular enough that they were like, oh, here's what we'll do. We'll kind of pull this away and do this little spinoff thing. So how did you guys enjoy the dynamic between The Rock and Jason Statham and their two characters in this movie?
I mean, there's definitely a banter going on there. It was classic, like, buddy comedy that I enjoyed. But I guess, because since there was, like, a lot of, like, drama behind the scenes with, like, the last Fast and Furious movie, there's, like, I can't really separate that. So, like, I know, like, the reason why they're together is because The Rock can't do any more movies with Vin Diesel. And I personally I don't really like Luke Hobbs from the Fast and Furious franchise. He's not my favorite character. And I actually really like Owen Shaw, which is their brother, who wasn't really mentioned at all in this movie. So I was kind of a little bit disappointed in that. But that's just because I like Owen Shaw in the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy to think about that this is like a spinoff of a franchise, like kind of, yeah, out of like behind the scenes political reasons. That's like, okay, well, let's turn this negative into 180 million global opening weekend. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about what they've done with the franchise as a whole is that all these characters still like matter. Like you could be Lucas Black, and Lucas Black still came back in the seventh movie and he's horrible. But like, hell, let's give him a scene with Vin Diesel. Why not? And like all these characters matter. All these relationships matter. You know, a lot of big caveats need to be made. For example, Deckard Shaw starts out, he ends the sixth movie killing a member of the family and then ends the eighth movie at the cookout. So it's like one of those things where it's just like, you gotta just let go of some stuff. But it seemed like, you know, Hobbs and Shaw were both at that same cookout at the end. They seemed to like kind of find common ground and a bit of understanding. And so like when they kind of went back to hating each other at the beginning of this movie, it was kind of, you know, you just got to kind of like fill in the blanks on your own, I guess, which is like, you know, you shouldn't have to. But for a movie like this, it's 5 miles wide, 1 inch deep.
You have to fill in so many blanks. Like that's this is a, like this plot is a string of like outlandish things happening. And that's fine. Like I'm not saying this as a criticism of it, but I am also fascinated by the idea that like, I don't know, do they really hate each other? As like, maybe they've asked you to fill in one too many gaps. Like, I don't know. There's just like the whole thing is a string of just like, and then this happens because like, why? Because we wanted to, because it would look cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's basically how the Rock movies get made these days. They're like, what are the set pieces that we want to hit? You know, like, is the string of seven cars hooked together while the Rock is holding onto it with a chain to fly a helicopter? Is that a big metaphor for something?
No,
no, absolutely not.
I can fill in that blank.
I was getting Captain American vibes from that scene when he was,
oh, for sure.
He was like pulling the helicopter down.
And that's probably where like all this is like heading to, where like I would love to get Roman and Tej spinoff movies. I'd love to get like just Toretto and Letty spinoff movies. Like I would love that. And then like they all come together for these big Fast and Furious. They're the big team up movies. Those are their Avengers movies. Mm. There's just so much you could do with this. You've built so many characters. They're definitely going to space. Don't even get me started on that.
Going back to Hobbs and Shaw, those two characters, I mostly enjoyed them. It's funny because, so like, I don't have any sort of background with Fast and Furious, obviously, but this was the first movie that I wanted to go see this one, and not even for the podcast. Like, I saw trailers for it and I was like, oh, Idris Elba and Vanessa Kirby. Like, yes, great. It's like, that for me was the draw. That was why I wanted to go see this movie, which I also understand is sort of like a thing, you know, they keep sort of pulling in more actors. Even in this movie, there are a couple, you know, quick cameos and stuff. So, you know, that is like part of what they're doing here. But I went to see this movie mostly for the two of them. But like, also, The Rock and Jason Statham are both capable of being incredibly charming. So I was like, cool, this is, you know, going to be great, whatever. And for the most part, I enjoyed those characters individually throughout this movie. But I got a little tired of the dick measuring bickering. There were twice as many of those conversations and those exchanges as there actually needed to be. I feel like that stuff worked for me much better during the action scenes, like the bits where they were working together, but still managing to sort of prank each other on the job. That stuff worked for me in a way that, like, listening to them say the iterations of the same thing, like, Jason Statham is short and, I don't know, The Rock's dick is small. Like that's, like, that was it. It was just, like, yeah. they just kept saying that's those the movie. Two things. Yeah, just over and over. Like,
that's it. That's the movie.
And that got a little, that wore on me. And I think it's tough because obviously this is Hobbs and Shaw, and so like that is the point on which your experience of the whole thing is kind of going to hinge. And for me, that's why I have sort of a, I mostly liked it, but also some of that stuff just got to be a little bit much, and like, yeah, could just like a little less.
That's, I think, a script with just like 25% more panache would have recognized that and like, yeah, save that for the action sequences. And then like for the rest of the movie, we kind of just want to see all these people be incredibly competent and like the best in the world, like they are.
At no point do I think more is the solution to anything in this movie. Like, I to me, my thing is, for the first, I don't know, half an hour, I was having a blast. I thoroughly enjoyed the first half an hour of this movie. And I'm not sure where it started to lose me, but probably somewhere to 30 to 45 minutes was about the point where, you know, again, like that, those little bits of banter started to kind of wear. And then it started to feel like each of the successive sequences of, you know, oh no, are they going to get caught? Like, what's going to happen here? Whatever. Those started to drag a little bit. And it's not that I think any one of those needed to be cut, but it's more that at every point you could have tightened all of those pieces up by like 2 or 3 minutes, and I would have enjoyed this whole movie infinitely more.
I'm gonna like agree with most of what you're saying, and I think this is why I left. My sister in the car was like, what would you rate that? And I think I said like a five, and my little sister was like 6, and my big sister was like, oh damn, I was gonna go with like an 8. So but I had fun. I thought that it was like, you know, fun, but I will agree with everything that you're saying. And I was very like surprised even while watching it that we got a couple of like extended scenes of just them two sitting next to each other, insulting each other.
Yes.
Like
yes.
For like minutes on end. And I'm just, it like, I, yeah. that also was a little bit too much for me. Like the idea that they hate each other and have to work together, I think is a good one. And like you're saying, in the middle of the action where like one of them jumps down the wire, but you know, Jason Statham is going to go take the elevator because duh, like that kind of thing played out well to me. The fact that they would just sit there and insult each other and like have these like really elaborate insults for each other. Like maybe one time that'd be fine, but it kept happening. And I was just like, I think that this movie leaned in too hard into the idea that we would just be here for like The Rock and Jason Statham and them insulting each other, where I would have liked them to be like a little more like, well, as long as people are here, let's give them a story. Like, I would have appreciated that a little more than what we got.
I will say, I mean, like the outlandish story, I enjoyed the absurdity of it. I enjoyed the degree to which it knew its own absurdity. The like nefarious corporation, that was the one. Like there were a couple things surrounding the nefarious corporation that I was like, I just like, I don't care. It worked with the overall absurdity. I just didn't care about it, in part because like the sort of villain that's telling Idris Elba what to do is faceless. And like, I don't know, like this like weird computer is telling Idris Elba what to do, but like Idris Elba seems to be the most powerful person in this world. So I don't know, whatever. But other than that, I enjoyed the over the top ridiculousness of the plot.
I was really trying to figure out who that disembodied voice was.
Yes.
And I was like trying to like recall back from all the other Fast and Furious is just, I'm like, is there something that I'm missing? And like, what's going on? Is yeah. So
I'm very interested to find out whether or not that's Cypher from the 8th movie.
Yeah, I was thinking too.
Yeah. Or which is who's the big bad in the 8th movie played by Charlize Theron, who was incredible. And if you listen back to those monologues, it's like, you don't speak like a human. Are you an alien? We're going to space. Or is it somebody new that we're gonna like, you know, from Hobbs past or whatever? But I do love how it was just like, I there's something charming about just how unvarnished some of those aspects were. Like Idris Elba both, or Brixton, excuse me, says both.
No.
Once at the beginning, he's just, yep, bad guy here. It's like, oh, okay, cool. So we're just doing that. And then, yeah, I'm Black Superman. And then later on, Hobbs saying, holy shit, he is Black Superman. It's like, cool. We're just saying it. This is fine. Yeah, yeah. Here we are. I also never had any experience watching anything that Vanessa Kirby had been in. So this is my first foray into watching her performance, and I thought she kicked ass. And if that's what The Crown is like, I'm going to start watching The Crown.
This is not what The Crown is like.
This is not at all.
Okay.
After watching The Crown and like watching how incredibly compelling she was on that, the idea of her playing this character, which is radically different than Princess Margaret, that was really exciting to get to see. And I obviously am biased because she's like a major draw of me going to see this in the first place. I feel like she stole every scene she was in. To a certain extent, it emphasized my sort of wishy-washy feelings about Hobbs and Shaw, in that like every scene that they were in with her, I was like, cool, what's she up to? Because like
I'm really glad she had a lot of scenes too, because at first I thought she was gonna be kind of a supporting, like a really supporting character, but she was one of them. Like, I feel like she was one of the main characters.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And even I think my favorite stretch of the movie for me was once they get to Samoa. There was just like so many. I'm a wrestling fan, so there was a lot of little things for me to like pick out from there as well. You had Roman Reigns in there. He was a strong, silent type. You know, one of the cousins there at the end. That's where I was going. The end, the big final showdown in the rain, the you know, crash helicopter and everything. I feel like the franchise as a whole, I'm trying to think back. Yeah, more or less is good at this. She got herself out of this. She did it herself. She didn't need either one of them like defeating, you know, Brixton and then going over and like helping out with the helicopter blowing up or whatever. Like, no, she fucking did it. Like, it's as simple as that. Hollywood.
And I feel like Fast and Furious does a good job at highlighting women's strength, both mm-hmm. with, I don't know, mind, but also physically. So I always liked the way that women are represented in the Fast and Furious franchise.
I have one small quibble on that front, and it is a personal pet peeve of mine. And this is like much bigger than this movie. I'm not like pinning this on, you know, Fast and Furious or Hobbs and Shaw or whatever, but multiple people at the beginning of this movie, like good guys, bad guys alike, Vanessa Kirby is in her 30s and she's playing an MI6 agent, and people kept calling her the girl. Like, she's a grown ass woman. She's not the girl. Like, I don't know. I just like it frustrated me. It frustrates me in general, the infantilizing language when it comes to women. Like, this is a common gripe that I have, and this movie kept doing it to me. I felt personally attacked. Maybe that's part of why I started to tune out around like the 30 to 40 minute mark. I was like, god damn it, say that word one more time.
I'm gonna this is probably not the right moment for this, but there was a pause, so I'm taking my moment. You mentioned Roman Reigns. I had no idea who this person is, except for during the scene when they were in Samoa. He was fighting pretty prominently behind The Rock, and I was just like, Jesus, who is that man? And I had no idea. He has absolutely no speaking lines. Maybe he roars and grunts, and maybe he says a word or two, but he is just so beautiful. So I was very distracted during that whole thing, and I had no idea how I was going to look up who he was. But apparently he's a professional wrestler, because I just Googled this, mm-hmm. and his name is Roman Reigns. So yeah. I am so thankful and so grateful to you, Rich.
Oh, somebody's watching SummerSlam this weekend.
Suddenly a wrestling fan. Who knew?
His involvement in this movie is actually super interesting, because he shot this movie. So he had to like step away from wrestling about maybe like a year and a half ago. Because a long time ago he had leukemia, and then it came back, and so he had to like step away and like start going undergoing treatments and things like that. And then like after his cancer was in remission and before he like came back to the ring, he like shot all these scenes. There's actually on The Rock's Instagram, there's a story with The Rock and Roman Reigns talking about, there's that scene where they like both throw the weapons and Roman Reigns like nailed a cameraman, and it's just very funny, very charming. And like, yeah, Roman Reigns was like slated to be like the guy. Everyone pushed back on him, but now he's like, he's back and he's great and everyone loves him, and he's a very charming man. I'm glad you noticed him.
So are we well, maybe not, but would you guys say that maybe some of these background characters, not necessarily Roman Reigns, honestly, he just growls a little bit, but like Vanessa Kirby and Idris Elba, do you think that they stole the show from The Rock and Jason Statham?
I definitely think so, but
yeah, I think Vanessa Kirby absolutely did. I would, if they wanted to spin off, I would absolutely watch her movie as
yeah,
well.
Same.
And like, I know something that what their intention is to do is to also, if we are to start talking about the cameos, they're going to start integrating Ryan Reynolds' character, Kevin Hart's character, and Rob Delaney's character into kind of building this world out and using those characters as well. Which those were also all pleasant surprises, and also not too surprising once you realize that this director is also the same director of Deadpool 2 and also Atomic Blonde, where we mentioned earlier in the podcast. So yeah, once you put those pieces together, it's like, oh yeah, of course, that makes sense. But definitely didn't see that coming going in, which was quite delightful.
I liked Idris Elba's character, but I just wanted more of him. You kind of got the history that he had with Jason's character, but I don't know. I just feel like when a really good villain, you get a little bit more out of them, and I don't think I got that.
I think that maybe goes back to like, I mean, I understand, like he had a motivation, I guess, mm-hmm. but it was mostly just like, we got to be big and strong. And because like the shadowy corporation was shadowy and the like main villain was like faceless, I think it just kind of added a little bit of around Idris. Like, I really like him, and I think he did a good job, but it wasn't my favorite. I think
he wasn't a standout character to me.
No, for sure. Vanessa Kirby.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
But him, you know, I'm not upset that he got deprogrammed.
You know, I honestly want a whole movie about the Shaws. Like, Helen Mirren can come in. She can do her thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I want.
I agree with everything that you guys are saying about Idris Elba's character not being maybe as fully fleshed out. I do think that he was properly menacing to be the essential bad guy, right? In spite of the fact that this is clearly the kind of movie where, like, you know, the heroes win in the end the whole time, there were definitely many moments in which I was like, oh, man, how are they going to get out of this one with him?
You know, that's funny you mentioned the hero aspect of it, because I feel like one thing that the Fast and Furious franchise as a whole does really well is that it really makes you root for morally gray characters. Because with the exception of Luke Hobbs, I don't think, like, Deckard Shaw or any of those other characters are heroes.
If we were to play like the drinking game, like drink every time that they get their record expunged or whatever, like that's just necessary to keep making these movies for that to happen. But yeah, like I said, freaking Deckard Shaw killed Han.
Yeah.
Beautiful, sweet Han.
And everybody forgave him.
Yeah.
To be clear, in this movie, knowing only this movie, the presentation of it is basically a lot of people thought he was a bad guy, but they were misled, and he never really did anything wrong.
You get that, like, there was one thing that put him on a bad path, but that thing was actually a lie. But then by the end of the movie, they're like, "Hey, mom, want to break out of jail?" So you kind of figure that, like, it is that something bad happened, and everybody thought that he was like the cause of it. So it put him down this like more gray path. And then him and his sister, now that they're on the gray path, they're like, we kind of like it here. Let's break mom out of jail. So I feel like they're not necessarily heroes, and you get that here. But I would agree that maybe Hobbs is more on the straight and narrow, which is part of what makes them, I don't know, butt heads a little bit, maybe.
Like Nicole was saying earlier, like there really, really wasn't too much you needed to know from the past to get into or to understand what's happening in this movie, except for like the actual whole relationship of Hobbs and Shaw, because there's a scene in 8 where Hobbs like looked up his record and saw like that he was, you know, a noble dude and like, you know, on the right side of stuff. And then it was alluded to, they're like, yeah, well, you know, sometimes the government asks you to do messed up stuff. You should know that. And keeps being alluded to that he was just asked to do something that he couldn't morally, like there is a moral code there. But yeah, once, you know, being bad's fun, y'all.
It does seem like a little bit of a stretch. I don't really understand how Vanessa Kirby got from being officer of the law, like basically, right? To I am now gonna break a prisoner out of prison. I didn't really follow how we got from A to B with her, but it's fine. It's Helen Mirren, I guess.
And also, the morally gray side has really cool cars, Nicole. Duh. Yes.
Well, and also, when you're morally gray, like, yes, these agencies you can't work for anymore, but the super secret ones with all the cool cars, you can
work for.
Like, they can't take responsibility, but you get all the cool, fun stuff. And apparently, you're financially fine, too.
Along these lines, I know we're meant to be talking about this movie, but it's hard to divorce it from, like, what everything that came before it. So it was wild to me sitting in that movie that we came from Fast and Furious 1, which was literally some souped up cars with Nas, all the way to the point.
Stealing DVD players.
Yeah, stealing DVD players. All the way to the point where we had like Black Superman, half cyborg with like a metallic or whatever spine or metal spine or whatnot. And it was just, I mean, none of these movies are particularly realistic, but this one was so sci-fi in that way that I was like, how did we get here? We were just stealing DVD players.
Really, the turn was 5, because 5 was the first time it like broke out of a genre and became a heist film. And they've kind of just been doing genre films ever since, which, yeah, like they're just going to keep doing these in different genres. The same way, this is a franchise that looks at what Marvel's doing
and saying like, oh yeah, we can absolutely do this in our own world. Mm-hmm. And did have elements of sci-fi. We're going to space.
But then, you know, they still like do those like simple callbacks. Cause like when they were in Samoa and they were trying to bring the helicopter down, when they like, when they flipped the Nas and it went down into the thing and the CGI, I was like,
moonshine.
Yep. I was like, here we go. Can't wait.
Yeah. It seems like there was some like real squirrely contractual wording with that first movie that's like, in perpetuity, these things still need to be in the movies. Nos shot, some dancing butt shots, mm-hmm. like these have to, throughout time, endure.
In the like wild mixture of things that came together for Hobbs and Shaw, I feel like somebody also said, people really like Moana, right? suddenly.
Did they recast Hobbs' daughter to look more like Moana?
I was literally thinking that. I was thinking of like the lady bad girls. I don't know what to call them.
Oh, yes.
But, but I know, Nicole, you mentioned in your synopsis that they might have been, but they weren't in like any of the previous movies. It makes me wonder if they're going to integrate them more.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because the one girl, she was on the poster. So when I was walking by, I'm like, oh, she must have a bigger role. But she didn't really.
Was she really?
Yeah, at least one of the posters that I walked by today.
Wait, so what the fuck were they there for?
I don't know if it was just like, oh, by the way, she has history with Deckard. Hint, hint. Future sequels, but I don't know.
Yeah. That going back to everything that Rich was saying about like, yes, how they're potentially trying to build up this set of characters to be its own thing so that The Rock and Vin Diesel never have to be in a movie together, but they can continue to, you know, make these movies and cash those checks. That seems to be there to say, aha, and here is one of the Hobbs and Shaw original characters.
I also feel like I was actually a little surprised that they didn't lean a little more heavily into the romance here. I thought that would have been like a bigger portion of it. But I feel like The Rock got one kiss, exactly one. And so Jason had to get one kiss, exactly one. And that was the extent of why that entire girl gang was there. Just, you know, keeping it even.
But speaking of like The Rock's kiss or whatever, like Vanessa Kirby and The Rock's chemistry. I was like, there's a few times where I'm like, okay, I kind of feel this. Like when they were in the office together, when she was first brought in, I'm like, I kind of like this little banter here. And then the, I don't know, unrealistic throwing from the Jeep into the semi or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I feel that too. So there was like some good moments between them where I'm like, I can see myself shipping this in the future. And they only knew each other for 3 days. I think that's it's important that they weren't head over.
Yeah, context here. Yes,
they weren't head over heels by the end of day three.
I was also expecting it to build towards that, and was pleasantly surprised that it did not. I feel like it was just the right amount. I also was slightly predisposed against it from the beginning, just because there's, you know, the age disparity in this casting situation. But they made a joke out of it right away in the interview scene with Hobbs and Vanessa Kirby, where I don't even remember what he says, but she's like, oh, must be a generational gap. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, the fact that they acknowledged it right away immediately softened me. And I was like, okay, fine. As long as we all acknowledge that this is what's happening, I will now support whatever you choose to do. And like, and then the fact that they proceeded to like take that good faith and not end it in, and now they're completely in love after their, you know, 3 days of knowing each other. I all around appreciated the way that they took that romance.
And just character wise, they both may have just been keeping each other at arm's length, because like, story wise, like, she might be dead in a week. So don't get attached.
Also, there's that. Also, I might have to kill you to save the world. So, like, you know.
Yeah, let's not get attached.
I'm just totally thrilled by thinking about how ridiculous this entire movie is. But somebody in the writer's room was like, no, we got to keep this romance realistic. They've only known each other for 3 days. One kissed. It was very like chase. It was like a peck on the mouth. Let's keep it moving. And I appreciate that person so much.
Yes, same.
Speaking of like the realistic in general, like I can suspend my belief a lot when it comes to the action scenes in this movie or in this franchise, period. But like when he jumped out the window and like just landed on like the wire, the wires when Deckard was taking the elevator down. I'm like, okay.
We had an in-depth conversation about what the state of his hands would have been.
Yes, I was
after
like,
sliding on that like metal whatever. Yeah, definitely one of the moments. I don't know why the trucks and the helicopter, I didn't like blink an eye at,
right?
But the fact that he was like sliding down barehanded, I was like, oh come on, are you serious?
I'll tell you right now, someone clanging and banging as much in the Iron Paradise as Hobbs is, like his hands are feet basically. There's so much callus on those hands, like I want to give that to you, but like no, he's got rock hands, no pun intended.
I also appreciated that I kept calling them eugenicists. It might be more like transhumanists. I'm not really sure what like the correct philosophical description of like the evil corporation is, but I appreciated that, you know, as a what a twist on eugenicists, that they weren't racist and they recognized that in fact the perfect human specimen is actually Idris Elba. Like, let's all be real.
Yeah, along the same lines as like Thanos wasn't wrong, Etienne wasn't wrong.
You mentioned like him at least being like believable and menacing, and I totally agree with that, because there were, I mean, apart from, you know, we know that he's like half robotic or whatever, but you don't really see that on the outside or anything. But every time he was like punching The Rock or Jason Statham, I was like, yes, I believe this. Conversely, anytime Vin Diesel got a hit on The Rock, I was like, boo, fake.
How many apple carts are you standing on, Vin Diesel?
I also, going back to Vanessa Kirby's action sequences, and just, you mentioned the punching and this is what made me think of it, but I appreciated that like the way that they used her physicality, it wasn't like the big brawling punches. She was really scrappy. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is Atomic Blonde, this is one of the things that I loved so much. Yes. About that movie is that like I think the physicality that they gave Charlize Theron was also fitting. It's not that she's out punching people, it's also that she's clever and is able to use her body effectively. And I think they gave Vanessa Kirby a lot of, you know, really good sort of action sequences in that regard.
Well, not surprisingly, because the director David Leitch, he's a former stuntman. I think he did like the stunts for The Matrix, I want to say. He also was uncredited as a co-director on John Wick. When it comes to any of the actual psychology behind the fight sequences and how people are fighting and why people are fighting the way they are, like, not a shocker at all that they put that much thought into how each character does what they do.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it was ended up being quite at that level, and this is also one of the ways in which it started to drag a little bit too, is that like I think that they had maybe a hard time balancing that sort of mindset with also the, like, this is a Fast and Furious movie. So, you know, we need the kind of, you know, big like cars and like machine driven set pieces. And I think part of why the movie started to drag near the end was that it wasn't they didn't have a good sense of how to balance those two, sort of his kind of built in skill set with the physical stunts versus, I don't know, car stuff, for lack of a better word. I'm not sure if that's the issue, but talking about it now, that seems like it might have been part of what was going on. I'm not really sure.
I really enjoyed, I thought that Vanessa Kirby was incredibly graceful, which I noticed in like her scenes or whatnot. There were a couple times that she was like sliding into like certain moves or whatnot that was just really cool to look at. And the way she did a few chokeholds too, like, and which you would imagine would be a great resource for her as a person who's mm-hmm. usually fighting people who are larger than her. So I thought all of that was great. And to this point of like mixing like that kind of like hand to hand with some of these like larger things and like the spy elements versus the lassoing a helicopter elements. And I mean, the movie talks about like, you know, stealth versus not stealth, I guess, throughout. But, you know, I thought it was really interesting that at the end, too, they just have to outright acknowledge, OK, well, if we're going to do like these like hand to hand things, how do we account for guns? How do we get guns? out of the equation. Because when you really have to think about how you extract that out of the equations, because people could just come in and shoot you. So they literally had to be like, okay, we have 6 minutes with no guns in order to give us any sort of like more hand-to-handy, combat stuff.
Right.
The only other thing that I want to call out as one of my favorite or most enjoyable portions of the movie, and I know that I said that I did not like this, but there was that extended sequence on the airplane where they're just insulting each other, but then The Rock starts talking about how if Vanessa Kirby wants to climb the big brown mountain, I lost it. It was partially because I would like to climb the big brown mountain. I could not stop giggling in the theater like a small child. I think these movies really put me back into the like 15-year-old mindset that I originally watched them with. But I thought that was hilarious, and I appreciated for them calling out, you know, like 50% of why I was in the theater in the first place.
Right. Yes. Acknowledging.
I like that scene too, but I've noticed that when Kevin Hart appeared, like, the plane didn't move. There was no, like, simulation that, like, oh, they're still in the air. I was just like, are they just sitting in a room? I usually don't notice those things, but I noticed it in this movie.
Not that I'm the audience that needs to be served, but as a wrestling fan, John Cena will be in Fast and Furious 9. So be on the lookout for when he gets his spinoff series as well.
I'm going to be watching this with my children, with my grandchildren. Like, come on, kids, we're going to go see Fast and Furious 38.
I mean, they clearly are going out of their way to find, you know, new ways to like rope people in. So, sure, yes, that is clearly the way. That's clearly their plan.
I mean, I love that everybody's in. They're like, Helen Mirren, you want in on this? And she's like, hell yeah, sign me up.
Right, like that's the thing. I look at this movie and it's basically, so they took Fast and Furious and they were like, okay, Nicole, I see that you don't really give a shit about our franchise, but let me tell you who we got to show. We got Vanessa Kirby. We got Idris Elba. We got Helen Mirren. I'm like, okay, you're right. I guess I have to go see a Fast and Furious movie.
You thought you didn't care.
Is that the trailer? Just when you thought you were done caring.
This is like, at a certain point, the future Fast and Furious spinoff trailers.
Hey, Nicole. Yeah, you, Nicole.
Well, like, this is what I feel like, just
shit out.
One at a time, you know, like they're gonna get all the holdouts. Like, they'll find a way.
I mean, there's a whole new crop of stars that are just, like, free now after, you know, the end of phase three with Marvel. Like, wouldn't be shocked to see some Chris Evans, wouldn't be shocked to see some Robert Downey Jr. popping up in these. Fuck, RDJ would be a good villain in these movies.
All right, if we're doing a wish list, I want Fast and Furious 10 or whatever with Tatiana Maslany.
Playing every character.
And on that note, thank you so much to Lainey and Rich for joining us this week. And thank you all for listening. We'd love to hear all of your thoughts on Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can also sign up to join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/snarksquad. There you'll find polls, live hangouts, and other bonus content. You can also find us on Twitter at snark_squad. You can find me at My Name Is Muddiness.
I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Rich Cammy on Twitter and Instagram. And go to arcadeaudio.net/podslam. For upcoming show announcements and schedules and how you can contribute and donate, no matter where you are, who you are, what you're doing, to help us reach our cause, our goal of $5,000.
And you can find me on Instagram and YouTube at Ginger Reads Lainey and on Twitter at Read Along Lainey.
Thank you, as always, to Stefan Chin for the theme music that is playing us out right now. And we will be back in your feed next week. Bye.